Like many of you, my first introduction to the idea of the Lost Ark came from the, what was it, 1981? Wow, could it really be 35 years ago already this movie came out? Raiders of the Lost Ark, starring Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. The idea that there may be these mystical objects that still exist in the world that may contain the insights or powers of God. It was fascinating. Who didn't get caught up in that? I mean, that's why the series was so successful. And of course, that helped to spurn so many people, or spur, I should say, so many people into research and study and trying to understand the history of these objects. And tonight we've got one of my favorite guests. He was on with me earlier this year as we talked about the historical King Arthur and his belief that he has found who King Arthur truly is, where Camelot is, what Excalibur is, and where it may be, and the final resting place of King Arthur. Well, he's back with us tonight as we continue exploring the histories and mysteries of Bible. We've got Graham Phillips with us this evening. He's been described as a historical detective, a modern-day adventurer, and in real life, an Indiana Jones-type character. He's been one of Britain's best-selling nonfiction authors now for 20 years. And in 1981, after working as a radio journalist and broadcaster for the BBC and editing a popular monthly magazine, he first turned his talents to investigating unsolved historical mysteries. And he has since written 13 books, which are in print around the world and have been published in 10 different languages. Tonight, evidence that the Ark of the Covenant really existed. And where it may be located, Graham Phillips has all the answers. We've got all the questions. You're listening to the best in overnight talk radio. For George Norrie, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. Again, sitting in for George Norrie, I'm Dave Schrader. My guest for the next 2 hours, Graham Phillips. Tonight, we discuss the Ark of the Covenant. Did it actually exist? What was it? And where could it have ended up? Well, Graham Phillips might have some insights to this, so let's talk with him now. Graham, welcome back to Coast AM.
Hello, Dave. I'm terribly sorry at the moment, but I have a cold, so if my voice sounds strange, please forgive me.
Your voice sounds fantastic. You with a cold still sounds better than me with not, so I'll take that anytime, Graham. Let's talk. Where did your fascination and interest begin with the idea of the Ark of the Covenant?
Quite honest, you hit it on the head when you said it was the Indiana Jones thing. It was that that actually got me interested. Because as far as I'd known until I saw that film, I knew that the Bible had described the Ark of the Covenant as being this golden chest that was made to contain the Ten Commandment tablets. But what I didn't know was that the story also said that the Ark had miraculous powers. So when I'd seen the film, I read through the relevant sections of the Bible and discovered that the Ark was said to have been used as a weapon. It was held by priests in front of the Israelite armies, and those opposing forces were leveled by something that seems like, to the Bible describes balls of light and what it describes as the glory of the Lord emanating from the Ark and destroying opposing armies. And it was also kind of used by the priests, as Indiana Jones says in the film, as a radio for talking to God. So I thought, well, apart from anything else, this ancient artifact was the most sacred and holiest relic that the ancient Israelites ever possessed. So I don't know what happened to it. And that's how it all started off.
Well, Dr. Jones, let's begin with our history lesson. You gave a brief taste of this, but at what point in the literature, the Bible, does the Ark make its first appearance? And how is this kind of, structured? Where did they get this information to create the Ark? Was it something they just used and it only became a holy relic after they put the tablets inside? What insight do you have for us on that?
It started off, according to the Bible, the Israelites were slaves in Egypt. And then sometime approximately 1300 BC, like 3,300 years ago, Moses is said to have led the Israelites to freedom. And they wandered for 40 years in the wilderness, which is the Sinai wilderness in what's now southern Israel, eastern Egypt, and southern Jordan. And they, while they were in that area, they went to somewhere that's described as three different names, as Mount Sinai, Horeb, and the Mountain of God. Now, this sacred mountain, Moses goes up there to the top alone, and he communes with God, and God inscribes with his own hand the Ten Commandment tablets, thou shalt not kill, and so on and so forth. Now, when he brings them down, eventually, an ark is made. Now, the ark shouldn't be confused with the Noah's Ark, the one that the animals went into.
Right.
An ark is actually just an old name for a container. So the ark that sailed around the time of the flood with Noah was a container for the animals, and this ark of the covenant was a golden chest, and it's described to be about 3.5 to 4 feet long, 2.5 feet wide and high, and it was made of wood but overlaid with gold, with two golden statues on the lid and poles to carry it by, and only the priests were supposed to be able to carry it. Anybody else who touched it would die instantly. And it was while the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness for 40 years that they kept their most holy items, the Ten Commandment tablets, inside this ark. So it was actually made according to the instructions of God. Moses told the people how to make it, and he got his idea from God directly, supposedly. What I find interesting is that at about that time in Egypt, our friend Tutankhamun is on the throne, or just shortly before. And when Tutankhamun's tomb was discovered, something very similar to an Ark of the Covenant was found inside. It's a golden chest. It's carried by a couple of poles. But instead of having angels on the lid, it has the jackal, a symbol of the god Anubis. And this is known to have been used to carry around sacred items and scriptures inscribed on stone inside the box that was sacred to the god Anubis. So in ancient Egypt, at the time that Moses is said to have lived, there was a custom of carrying around sacred objects in golden boxes, and on the lid was something representing what was inside. So that's possibly where the idea of the Ark originally came from.
Now, are there other references throughout the Bible, the Torah, any of that, that describes other items that had this kind of power to it, that it was specially crafted? I mean, you alluded to the ark, which carried the animals, and that was specifically designed and built by again, directions given from God to Noah to do it this way. Do we see any other examples of that throughout the Bible history of designed creations that were supposedly gifted to us from God?
That's a very good question. We don't. There are many other items associated with ancient religions. For example, the Holy Grail, which is supposed to be in the cup used by Christ at the Last Supper, and then it gained miraculous powers. But no one was in. That was just a cup that was already there that Jesus decided to use in the Last Supper. And there are other examples of supposed holy relics throughout the Old Testament.
Well, and can I ask you about that, Graham? I know you do considerable work with the idea of the Holy Grail as well. Now, you know, many of us have heard the tale that the Holy Grail was the goblet or cup that he used at the Last Supper, and that's, you know, what made it holy was this is where he kind of indoctrinated his group and went through the process of like a communion with them at this time, making this such a holy relic. But I thought that there's also been some debate over the fact that a cup or something was used at the site of the crucifixion that gathered some of Christ's blood in it, and that might be the true artifact known as the Holy Grail. Do you know any sides on that either way?
I do. There's actually an early Christian tradition. There were two items associated with the Holy Grail, both thought to be used to collect Christ's blood at some point at the crucifixion. One of them, as I said, is the cup used by Jesus at the Last Supper. According to that tradition, one of Jesus's male followers, Joseph of Arimathea, used the cup Jesus had used at the Last Supper to collect a few drops of his blood. The other tradition was that Mary Magdalene, Jesus' closest female follower, used a small ointment jar that she had with her to collect a few drops of Christ's blood while he was on the cross. Now, both of these items and both of these characters who are associated with these items, Mary Magdalene and Joseph Arimathea, are said to have eventually fled Palestine and come to the island of Britain, bringing these items with them. And early stories, Grail romances, as they're known, that were written in the Dark Ages and the early Middle Ages, refer to these people as hiding these cups somewhere in Britain. Now, I've never been able to do much on my, from my point of view, tracing the story of the Cup of the Last Supper, but I was able to trace an item that was thought to have been the cup or the chalice used by Mary Magdalene, all the way down to a family that lived in central England in the 19th century. And when one of these people, a guy called Thomas Wright, had what he believed was Mary Magdalene's cup, and he had nobody to hand it on to because he had no children, he hid it, and he left a weird series of clues as to where it was. And ultimately, in the 1920s, a builder who was moving some statues in an old stately home in central England managed to find this cup secreted in the base of it, in a little niche that was put in the chamber of a statue. And his family still had this when I was investigating it a few years ago. And I was able to actually go there, take a look at this little cup, which is literally just like the shape and size of an egg cup, and ask them if I could take it to the British Museum. I did, and they said immediately that it was around about 2,000 years old. It was a Roman scent jar, and it was made from alabaster, green alabaster. And this is exactly what the Bible says that Mary Magdalene's little cup was made from. So that was fascinating in its own
way. Wow. That is astounding, and you were able to track something down. Why is more not said about that historical relic?
Because I think in recent years, pretty much shortly after I'd actually published the research that I'd done into that cup, Dan Brown's famous Da Vinci Code came out, and everybody got interested in the fact that the Holy Grail was some symbolic reference to Jesus marrying Mary Magdalene, and it kind of got, my stuff kind of got brushed under the carpet for the last few years.
Wow. All right. Now, this cup still exists. You've seen it. You've been near it. Does the family claim any strange or supernatural occurrences regarding this?
Not yet, but all I can say is that the people who had it did lead extremely long lives and were quite healthy. And one of the legends associated with the Grail is that anyone who possessed it could drink from it to cure any ill and could also, basically be immortal. Now, I'm not saying these people are immortal. They have been quite well. But nothing that I can actually say off the top of my head, it would be described as a miracle having occurred near it. No.
Well, you've got that, the two versions of the Holy Grail. I think one of the other pieces, the Shroud of Turin, of course, we briefly discussed last night on the show. There was the cloth that was also laid over Christ's face, which was said to have some healing principles associated with it, and it gathered some of the blood of Christ. Now, what about the Spear of Destiny? I know this, again, being kind of an Indiana Jonesy kind of trippy story, but is there any, in your knowledge, any true existence of the spear that was used to lance Christ while he was on the cross still existing somewhere?
Well, if the biblical account is accurate, then a Roman soldier put a spear into the side of Christ in order to end his suffering on the cross. Now, this, again, you would imagine that early Christians would not have wanted to keep an item that had killed Jesus as a sacred, as something sacred. But I suppose it was the idea that Jesus' blood was once on this spear made it an important sacred relic to be got hold of. The whole problem about Jesus with the church in the Middle Ages was the fact that, according to the Bible, Jesus ascended bodily to heaven. So you couldn't have any of his bones on earth. And the cult of saints' bones in the Middle Ages was massive business. If a church had bones of a particularly important holy person, particularly somebody who was mentioned in the Bible, then people would come flocking to that church in order to, on the hope that the bones would forth. And if you would actually, I mean, if you had Jesus' bones, you'd have the best of them all. But obviously, if you believe the Bible, there wasn't any bones of Jesus. So it was things that were associated with him or things that had held his blood. So that's where the lance or the spear, that a spear of destiny, which is supposed to have been thrust into his side, comes in. Interestingly, again, this isn't what happened to it. I have no idea. There are various items throughout the world that are thought to have been it. Hitler in the Second World War was obsessed by it. The SS went searching for it. I don't know what they intended to do with it, but so many people have believed that it really existed. But what I find really interesting about all of these items, as you rightly pointed out, is that these were items that incidentally became holy relics. They weren't specifically made on the instructions of God, except for the Ark of the Covenant.
Now, with the Ark, I know that so much has been said that, you know, and again, we mentioned it in last night's show, the idea of going into war while carrying a relic, a holy relic, be it, you know, the head or finger or hand of a saint, was somehow meant to lead your power into battle and help you win. And with the accounts of the Ark being used as a weapon and as a way to, you know, disassemble the armies and forces that moved against them, I would think, you know, with the fascination that the Nazis had and Hitler with trying to locate some of these items, you would think, though, if it did fall into the wrong hands, it would be ineffectual, right? It would be just a box. Because if this was made to, you know, host the Holy of Holies and the words of God, that when opened by heathens and people that mean nothing but negativity and destruction, it would effectively render itself useless in their hands.
Well, the Bible describes people who were not the priests and properly sanctified to use or touch the Ark. If they touched it, they fell, dropped down dead. So it kind of had some defense mechanism, if you like, according to the Bible. I suppose the idea is it couldn't fall into the wrong hands. In the Indiana Jones film, when the Nazis open it, all sorts of hideous sort of demons fly out and kill them all off. But in reality, we know that many armies of ancient times, as you said, and in the Middle Ages, would carry into battle boxes with bones of a saint or some holy person or sacred items. The Egyptians did it, possibly like in Tutankhamun's tomb. We've got this golden box with the god Anubis on the top of it, and inside would have been some statue maybe of Anubis or some ancient sacred text written that was somehow supposed to have miraculous powers. These things were carried in front of armies as a kind of, if nothing else, a good luck charm. And maybe, but the Bible specifically says that armies fall before it. The Ark is carried around and around the city of Jericho that was impossible to breach its walls until the walls came tumbling down with the power of the Ark. Quite how it did this when it is not explained, but so it may be that in ancient times the Israelites had one of these golden boxes. I honestly believe that they probably did have a physical item like this that carried around two tablets inscribed with something that they believed had been written by the hand of God, and that they, because they were successful, they attributed this to the Ark. Incidentally, we know now from archaeology that around 1313 BC, the ancient city of Jericho, its walls did collapse. The archaeologists have shown this, but it is thought that an earthquake was responsible. Now, let's just say that the Israelites turned up at that place around the same time as the earthquake and were able to take the city. They may very well have attributed this to the power of the Ark itself. So I think what the most important thing is that I really believe that regardless of what it could or couldn't do, that the Ark was an historical artifact.
Graham Phillips, our guest, we will return. Could it have been that there was more than one Ark? And what has happened to them through the years? Graham Phillips has some insights. We'll talk with him. We'll take your calls later next hour as we continue our journey on the search for the Ark of the Covenant on Coast to Coast AM. High atop the Twin Cities in St. Louis Park at KTLK AM 1130 and 103.5 FM, our home here in the Twin Cities with Coast to Coast AM. I am your host this evening, Dave Schrader. I'm the host of Darkness Radio. You can hear us five nights a week, Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. to midnight. And you can listen to the live stream right on our site at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com or DarknessRadio.com. And because this is the home of Darkness Radio, you can also find the home of Coast to Coast AM. So stay with us after 9 to midnight with Darkness Radio. George Norrie, Coast to Coast continues on right after our show. So it's all there. It's easy. It's accessible and a lot of fun to check out. I also want to make a quick mention. A lot of you may not know this. Aside from being the host of Coast to Coast AM, George Norrie is also the host Beyond Belief. You can check out his TV show. So if you like what you hear on Coast to Coast, you'll love what you see when he presents all of the great topics, guests, and information in one comprehensive look. Check it out for yourself, beyondbelief.com. Get all the information at the website. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Graham Phillips continues as we go on a quest for the Lost Ark. When did it become lost? You would think something with this power, something with this grandeur would have been kept in the public eye so that the world knew where it was at all times, because it would have been considered a bit of a threat. We'll talk with our guest and see what his thoughts are on that when we return. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Graham Phillips, our guest. Graham, is there any reference in the Bible to other versions of the Ark of the Covenant? Any multiple copies, anything like that, that might have been made to distract the hordes that followed them, to, you know, if they thought that this was the Ark of their power, that they would make multiple copies and keep people off balance on which one is real?
There's an early tradition that there was a copy made of the Ark of the Covenant. This is not actually said in the Bible itself, but there was a very early tradition that suggested that a copy was made. And interestingly, ultimately, when the Israelites settled in Israel, they built the Temple of Solomon. This was built around about 1000 BC, according to the Old Testament, and it was built specifically to contain the Ark of the Covenant, and there was a specific area within this temple called the Holy of Holies where the Ark was kept. And one tradition is that this particular Ark was a copy, and the original was ultimately taken out of Israel and taken to Ethiopia, and the Ethiopian church still claims to have it. And there's a little chapel somewhere in Ethiopia. There's a guy there who claims to be the guardian of it, and they say that it really is the Ark inside this church, although as far as I know, nobody apart from whoever guards it has ever actually seen it. So that is one tradition. It's not the one that I hold to. I'm sticking by what the Bible says, that the one that was in the temple carried on being the original.
This massive piece of power, this amazing weapon of mass destruction, if you will, and also a powerful religious amulet in a sense, why would it end up going into hiding? Why would it have to be hidden? If you'd figure that the church that brandished it, the branch of religion that had this, would command the world. I mean, that would be that type of article would definitely enthrall people to stay in religious beliefs and keep them there. Why would this suddenly have to go underground and be hidden?
Well, what the Bible says is the Ark remains safely in the temple in Jerusalem until, for like 400 years, until 597 BC by our estimations today. And Jerusalem wasn't taken over by anybody else. It remained free. But in 597 BC, Jerusalem was overtaken and sacked by the Babylonians from what is now Iraq. And at this time, according to the second book of Maccabees, which is an Old Testament book that isn't included in the Protestant Bible, but it was in the original Bible and it's still included in the Catholic Bible, there were certain religious connotations of that particular book that the Protestants didn't like and had it taken out. But you look at any Catholic Bible, you'll find the second book of Maccabees, and it tells us that when the reason why the Babylonians were able to sack Jerusalem is because pretty much the people of Jerusalem, the Hebrew people there, had not been 100% faithful to God, so he kind of like turned his back on them for a while. But the prophet, God's chosen person, Jeremiah, in Jerusalem, received instructions from God that he must hide the ark before the Babylonians turned up. And according to this particular account, Jeremiah takes the ark, as well as some other treasures from the temple, and hides them in a cave. And the place we're told that this cave is at the mountain where Moses saw the inheritance of God. Now, that's possibly two places. One, Mount Nebo, which is supposed to be where Moses saw the promised land, or Mount Sinai, which is where God revealed himself to Moses, where the Israelites were said to have seen God himself, and where the Ark of the Covenant was actually made. So it's my belief that the Bible is telling us that the Ark was taken out of Jerusalem when the place was sacked by the enemy Babylonians, and ultimately taken to Mount Sinai, which was the mountain of God where Moses originally saw the burning bush and communed with God himself.
The idea that this chest would be a weapon, would be something to inspire, would also possibly work as a radio of some sort, some kind of transmitter. I know that a lot of the ancient alien theorists and UFO believers believe that what they were dealing with was communicating with either God or with an alien race because of this. I know there's this mention of this large plank or craft that would hover over the children of Israel as they were making this trek, and sometimes it would protect them from the sun, protect them from the rain. Sometimes it would land on the ground, it would go back up into the sky, loud booming voices would be heard from it. When you hear those kind of aspects with this, I mean, does it start making the story sound too fantastic to be true, or do you think that goes hand in hand with what this ark truly was a communication device?
Well, what I find fascinating about it, I mean, my research is simply trying to trace what happened to it and where it is. I think there's enough information, enough evidence that there was an historical artifact that was considered holy by the ancient Israelites, and that this ark was an historical item. Then, of course, you've got, on the other hand, do we necessarily then believe in the stories associated with it, that it was able to do all these miraculous things? Perhaps we won't know that until we actually find it, should we ever be able to find it. And I think I'm close, but we come onto that later. But the interesting thing is that the Bible describes how a light, what seems to be some sort of ball of light, appears above the ark. Remember I said there was two golden angels on its lid. They were apparently facing each other with their wings outstretched. And in between these two angels was something that the Bible describes as the mercy seat. We're not told what this is. Obviously some sort of item or area in the middle of the lid of the ark, which was different to the rest of it. And here, above here, is said to have appeared something they describe as the glory of the Lord. Now, from what we can gather, it seems to have been some kind of ball of light. And when this happened, it was from this ball of light that sometimes, shall we say, energy of some kind was to be emitted that would bring down enemy armies. But also, when the glory of the Lord appeared, the prophets, the priests, could stand beside it and could be inspired to hear the word of God. In fact, if you read the Old Testament, you'll see over and over again, it says, and God said unto the Israelites, and God said unto Samuel, and so on and so forth. How is God saying this? You know, a lot of people think, hang about a minute, how is God doing the talking? Well, if you read between the lines, you can see that it's actually through the ark that God is apparently doing the talking. Now, it may be simply that these people who were prophets were like trance mediums. They would stand near the ark and go off into a trance and believe that they were speaking the word of God. Maybe that's how it happened. But if there is a possibility that there was something mysterious about the ark that was able to inspire people or do something different to anything else, then it seems to have had something to do with this mysterious ball of light, the glory of the Lord that appeared on top of it.
When the ark eventually goes missing, does it reappear throughout historical reference anywhere? I mean, do people, and I don't just mean the Bible, I mean, are there any other points in history where they seem to stumble upon it, or it shows up and then and vanishes again?
Absolutely, and it's fascinating that the people who claim to have found it again many, many centuries later were the Crusaders, the Knights Templar. Now, this was a group of Crusader knights, warrior monks, if you like, that was founded in the 1100s, and they had members throughout Europe, in France and Britain and other places, and the idea was that they would go to the Holy Land, to the Middle East, and defend pilgrims traveling to Jerusalem to worship at the sites associated with Jesus. But then later, they became warriors whose job it was to fight the native people of that area to keep Jerusalem in Christian hands. So they became warrior monks. Now, one group of these Knights Templar was stationed in what is now southern Jordan at this city, ancient city of Petra. Now, this was a valley in the middle of the Shara Mountains in southern Jordan in the Sinai Wilderness. And what's there now are the ruins of a city that was built in like Roman times, much later than the period Moses said to have lived, but many years before the Templars were there. And in the late 1100s, a group of these Templars were stationed at Petra, and they basically their job was to guard a pass through these mountains. A lot of the time they were doing nothing, so it seems that they had to occupy themselves. And there's lots of ancient caves and ancient tombs in the rocks around Petra, and they seem to have basically entertained themselves by grave robbing and opening these various tombs and searching these caves for precious items. And one of the things that they claim to have found, at least according to an Arab chronicler, is a golden chest that they believed was the Ark of the Covenant. And so consequently, you do have somebody many, many hundreds of years later, I mean, over 1,500 years later, when the Ark was actually supposedly hidden, claiming to have found it again.
With that said, did it ever surface in multiple places at once so it was easy to dismiss these claims?
Well, there is the claim that the people of Ethiopia also did have an ark, but the ark they had was apparently the original, and the one that was hidden that was in the temple was a copy, so you've got a couple of arks kicking around. But even if it was a copy, the one that was in the temple when the Babylonians invaded would be an amazing discovery to find.
Mm-hmm.
But what's fascinating about these Templars who claim to have found it in these mountains is that, remember I said that the story about Jeremiah the prophet hiding the ark is that it's possible from reading the account that he hid the ark at Mount Sinai, also known as the Mountain of God. Well, one of the mountains in the Shara Range in southern Jordan totally fits everything the Bible tells us about Mount Sinai. Now, most people think, well, Mount Sinai, surely it's known. There is a place in eastern Egypt said to be it by the Catholic Church and the Greek Orthodox Church. But this particular mountain only came into Christian tradition after the birth of Christ. The actual descriptions of where Mount Sinai is more fits with the area of southern Jordan where the Shara Mountains are. And in particularly, there's a mountain which has, it's called Jebel Madaba. And this mountain exactly matches the way that the Bible describes Mount Sinai. In fact, the local Bedouin people who live there today believe this was where Mount Sinai was. Well, we are told in the Bible that when Moses first takes the Israelites to Mount Sinai, what happens is that he creates a miraculous stream at the bottom of it by striking his staff against the rock. And the local Bedouin have a shrine there. It's still there today, which is said to be the very place where Moses struck his staff against the rock. So the mountain that rises above it is thought by them and seems to fit with the topography described in the Bible as being the mountain of God. Now, if that's where the ark was hidden, what's fascinating is that the Knights Templars, who claim to have found the ark in the late 1100s, were digging around exactly in that place. So perhaps they did find it.
Wow, that is fascinating. You know what's so strange to me about all of this, Graham, is, you know, that it's so hard to pin down some of these places from biblical times. I would think just through oral tradition, it would be so much easier to, oh, yeah, this is now Mount blah, 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 but it was once Mount Sinai. Why is it, where did that tradition and that loss come, do we know? And why there's this break between historical and probable biblical locations?
Well, most people tend to think that the tradition amongst the Jewish people is that the first five books of the Old Testament, the ones that describe the wandering in the wilderness and so forth, and the escape from Egypt and Moses' time, were written by Moses himself. Most biblical scholars doubt this because, well, firstly, it talks about the death of Moses and where he's buried, so that hardly would be written by himself. But it's quite clear when you look at different passages of the Bible, at that early part of it, that they were written by different scribes in a different style. But it is generally thought today that most of these accounts were not written down until many hundreds of years later. In other words, the early nomadic Israelites that gained the tradition of escaping from Egypt and began the stories of the Ark and all the other events associated with Moses were transmitting this information down orally from one generation to the next. And so by the time they were written down, sometime, shall we say, in the 500 BC, the location of many of these original sites had been forgotten, or at least renamed, because they're writing about events, you know, from people. They might have the basic story right that's been passed down throughout the years, but names of places change. The people who were writing these stories were based in what's now around Jerusalem, and they were talking about places that they'd never seen or never been, and there was no such thing as the internet then to look it up and find out, oh, is this the right place? Does this match the description of what we're talking about? So I think this is why a lot of these places, the true locations got mixed up over the centuries.
Fascinating stuff. Ron Wyatt, we only have about a minute and a half left. The gentleman by the name of Ron Wyatt believes that he had found the Ark in Israel. Are you familiar with his story, and did it hold any credence at all?
Well, I have looked at other people's ideas, but I tend to just do my own research and don't really like commenting on somebody else's ideas because, for all I know, they may be right, but all I can say is that I feel that what my research has led to is based on the solid original source material rather than perhaps much later traditions.
When we return after the top of the hour, let's talk about that, your historical reference and how you were able to track this down. So many years later, so far removed, how did you find this and what clues started to point you in the direction? And real quickly, Graham, do you have a website people can follow you on, or is it best just to catch you on your Facebook page?
You can get me on my Facebook page, which is Graham Phillips Author, but my website is grahamphillips.net.
And you give a lot of this information in video vignette form showing where you piece together some of these ideas and research that you've done, correct?
Yeah, if you go onto my website and just click on the first page, there's pictures of the book. You click on the Templars and the Ark of the Covenant, which is the name of the book I wrote about this, and there's a good 13 pages there with pictures of everything and links to videos to show all the places I'm talking about.
All right, well, check it out for yourself during the break, grahamphillips.net, or you can follow him on Facebook. We'll continue looking for the Ark of the Covenant with our guest, Graham Phillips. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.